It's time for Mind Your Business on 710 WOR and the iHeartRadio Network to present the weekly business radio show produced by the award-winning marketing firm Bottom Line Marketing Group, BLMG, sharing business and marketing strategies to make you and your business successful. Now, here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis.
Yes, thank you for joining us here on another edition of Mind Your Business on 710 WOR throughout the New York, New Jersey metro area and into Western Pennsylvania. You'll hear why I'm giving a shout out to Western Pennsylvania in a moment. And of course, throughout the world on the powerful iHeart Radio Network. Yes, thank you, New York. The Nielsen ratings have us once again in the top 10 in New York AM radio. We came in number 3. That is a big deal. And who do I say thank you to? Of course, to our great guests and to you. Every single listener to this show drives our numbers up. And you've come to expect great business content week in and week out. And we deliver. And this week, oh, do we have a treat for you. But, you know, it's radio, so just suspense for another moment or two. Of course, our program now in its 8th year, we have featured such a wide array of guests and corporate leaders. We had on Steven Sadoff, the former CEO of Saks Fifth Avenue, Beth Comstock, the former vice chair and chief marketing officer at General Electric, John Sculley, the former CEO of Apple and Pepsi, and hundreds of other incredible guests, each one sharing business tips and strategies and advice that can get you ahead in today's business world. Well, before we get to our guests, just to be a mention, I have to give shout outs to all those that make this show possible week in and week out. Special thank you to the great team here at Bottom Line Marketing Group, BLMG, in particular, Sruli, Michal, Betzalo, Brocha, Michael, Miriam, Nachi, and others who make this show so successful. A special thank you to Darren and Peter out at 710 WOR. Thank you, Zev Brenner, for the shout-out before we come on. We're, of course, we're also syndicated on many different channels. Our weekly column in the Jewish Home, which features a Q&A format, a print summary format of the actual show. We're on Nucky Radio, Business Class Clips, Lakewood Scoop, and of course, we're on all the popular podcasting channels, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and others. Lastly, we have a very robust YouTube channel. Tonight's show will go up on YouTube. On YouTube, we're at 710 WOR Mind Your Business. And when you subscribe and you click on notifications, you'll automatically be notified when we post. We usually post shows on Wednesday. You'll be notified when the show goes live. Well, without further ado, to our incredible guest, Reuven Ribiat, General Manager of Online Kosher Wine. Online Kosher Wine is a premier resource for a comprehensive selection of kosher wines. They evolved from its origins as a family-owned and operated retail kosher wine enterprise founded in Pennsylvania in 1954, nearly 7 decades ago. Known for legendary customer service, rapid turnaround, discounted pricing, and meticulous attention to detail, they have a loyal customer base from across the United States and beyond. On tonight's show, in particular, we will discuss successfully converting a brick-and-mortar business to an online business. A lot of people are curious about how that works. It's almost 7 decades of a family business. How does that work? And customer service as an anchor to a great business model. With that intro, we give a very warm welcome, Reuven Ribiat. Thank you for joining me here on 710 WOR.
My pleasure.
Okay, so perhaps you could just initially tell us about your background.
I was born and raised in Detroit. As I grew up, I went to high school, out of town yeshivas. After a while, like a lot of boys my age, I ended up in BMG, Bank Medrash Kavod, in Lakewood, got married, and that's it. That's where I am now. I'm married, and I'm my father-in-law, may he rest in peace, who happened to be one of my best friends, invited me into the business.
Wow. Now, that's probably a story in itself. That's beautiful how you said that. My father-in-law invited me into the business, one of my best friends. That's, you know what, we want to focus on business, on the business side of that, but that's very beautiful how you put that, because that's, yeah, others should learn and emulate that. Okay, what's the backstory of OnlineKosherWine.com?
Well, what had happened was when I came into the business, we were basically a Judaica store, a 90, 95% Judaica, 5, maybe 10% wine sales. Wine sales, of course, perk up by Yontif, especially Pesach time. That's when most of the wine was sold. As time went on, people got more and more interested in wine. There was more variety available, and we started selling more and more wine. Eventually, we ended up morphing more into wine business than we did into a Judaica business. Basically, 50% of my time was being spent on taking care of Judaica, and really, it was only 20% of our business.
Now, okay, my understanding is that when you came in, it was to deal with succession. That means, I guess, the previous owners had was time to hang up their cleats. They wanted to retire, whatever the case is, which we'll share. Perhaps you could discuss how the, because that's not so simple. Some people might think, okay, it's handing over from one set, one generation to the next. Okay, is everyone capable? How do you deliver a box of glass jars from one room to the other, making sure that nothing smashes, if we could use that mushel, if you will? Could you talk about succession?
Yeah, well, that was my father-in-law's intention. He had brought not only myself, but my brother-in-law into the business as well. The purpose is to allow for a confidence from our customers and our vendors, to let them know that we are in the hair for the long term. And my father-in-law was a very far-sighted person, always thought about strategic values as opposed to short-term values. And as a result of that, he brought us in. That's what a successful business does. If you want to have a business that's going to be successful in the future, you have to be successful now. And in order to be successful now, you also have to show that you're going to be successful and available and there in the future as well.
Perhaps can you share, and I'm not talking about dissecting how complicated it is, but in a perhaps superficial way, some tips that one needs to keep in mind when they transition a business from one generation to the next?
Well, the first thing you have to do is your homework. Make sure you understand the differences between bricks and mortar and online business. Both are retail, but they're very, very different. In the case of bricks and mortar, the obvious advantage to the customer, and that's who you're trying to talk to, is that you can get the product right away. The disadvantage to the customer is that the availability may not be as much, or it may be that they haven't had a chance to fill the shelves, or the customer may not be able to find somebody to help. Whereas in an online business, none of those are issues. On the other hand, in the online business, you have to be concerned the customer wants something. They're used to coming to a retail store, picking it up, and leaving with it. That doesn't happen with an online business. Online business, you place an order, it comes to you in a day or two, if you're lucky.
Now, that's incredible advice in terms of transitioning a business from brick and mortar to an online. Perhaps we could just hold on, if I may, for another moment. What about transitioning from the management perspective, from the executive perspective? A member of a family who has been at the helm for 2 decades, 3 decades, they're now handing it over to, I don't know if we say a newbie, or someone who's just coming in. What are some tips in terms of that transition?
Well, the first thing is that you have to respect the vast amount of experience and wisdom that whoever it is that's handing over to you has. In this case, it was my father-in-law. He's a very easy person to respect. He was extremely knowledgeable and above all, extremely honest. He didn't say anything unless he knew for a fact that it was true. And if it wasn't, didn't know for sure it was true, he would tell you that. That's extremely invaluable. I mean, there's nothing more valuable than that. And respecting that is going to make it a lot easier for you as the future or the newbie to take over, because it shows a willingness on your part to listen. After all, this man or woman has spent 25, 30 years building up a business, they don't want to see me crash it to the wall or something like that. So they're going to want to feel confident in my ability. And one of the best ways to feel confident, am I listening to what they're saying? And then after you start having your own management style, if they come to you and they say, "Lo, you know what? I think you might be better off doing it this way," you have to pay attention. That's really the primary, just common sense and knowing how to deal with people. That's all.
By the way, I'm enjoying this your advice so much, because you have people that sometimes come in, and especially the youngsters, they think they know it all. Like, you know, everything you're doing is wrong. You know, like, wait a second. You may have some new ideas. I'm willing to listen, but wait a second. Respect the fact that I've been running the show, and I've been at the helm of this aircraft, at the helm of this large ship for decades. Okay, I know a thing or two of what I'm doing.
That's correct. That was that's just common sense and common courtesy. And of course, a new perspective is always valuable, but you have to make sure that it fits in within the parameters of what you're trying to do.
Amazing. My guest this evening is Reuven Ribiat, president of OnlineKosherWine.com. So I'm not even going to ask him, where can people find that more information? I just said it, OnlineKosherWine.com. But before we go to a break, and tonight's show brought to you in part by OnlineKosherWine.com, perhaps you could spend a minute describing the full array of clients and how you service them online.
Well, our clients come from all over the country, everywhere. There are a few states we don't service, but for the most part, we service every single state in the country, even Alaska and Hawaii if they really need it, although it's usually not, doesn't usually pay to send out product there. The bottom line.
All right, no pun intended here, yeah.
In all business is attention to what the customer wants. The customer wants something and you can fulfill that need. That's it. And you have to do it in a way where obviously you're going to make some money. But that's more than anything else. And maybe even more important, the customer has to know that. They have to feel that you're being honest and you're in their corner, so to speak.
We're speaking with Reuven Ribiat, president of OnlineKosherWine.com. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
Ever wished as you're sitting alone in a corner at one of those networking events that you could connect better with other people? Ever beat yourself up because you didn't speak up again at that meeting? Or been sweating buckets terrified before a presentation because you aren't confident about your public speaking skills? We've all been there. The good news is, you can change. For over 100 years, millions of lives have been transformed because of our courses at Dale Carnegie. We develop people's confidence, leadership abilities, communication skills, public speaking skills, and human relations. Both our public courses and customized corporate workshops have proven results. We all have goals, but only a limited amount of time to reach those goals. Let Dale Carnegie help you get there. For further information, visit us online at dalecarnegie.com. That's dalecarnegie.com, where you can explore all the training courses and regional locations that are available to you. dalecarnegie.com.
Every accounting firm has a history. The history of Saul Friedman & Company spans 45 years of commitment, dependability, and reliability for our clients. A client of Saul Friedman & Company is never alone in making critical business decisions. Behind each business move stands the full resources of an accounting firm with the financial know-how to inspire confidence and ensure success. Call 718-232-1111 now to find out how Saul Friedman & Company can help you grow your business. There's a reason our tagline is accounting with accountability. That is what we believe in, and that is the ethic we follow. For a free consultation, call 718-232-1111. That's 718-232-1111. Or visit our website at snfco.com. That's snfco.com.
Eli Manning here. Recently, my business schedule has me scrambling. There's a lot to get done, and like most business owners, there just aren't enough hours in the day. But with Investors Bank, I can slow down a bit and fit my business banking into my schedule.
With Investors Bank, you can manage your accounts anytime with the flexibility of online and mobile banking.
You know, I never did like to scramble.
Visit investorsbank.com or stop by a branch. Member FDIC. Investors Bank is a division of Citizens Bank N.A.
And we're back. Mind your business with Isaac Saftis right here on 710 WOR and throughout the world on the powerful iHeartRadio network. Tonight's show featuring Reuven Ribiat, president of OnlineKosherWine.com. He's a very busy person, but he carved out a bit of his schedule to appear on the show in order to share tremendous advice. We're in the first part of tonight's, the first segment in tonight's show, we talked about transitioning a business from brick and mortar to online and from one generation to the next. In case you just tuned in, no worries. By Tuesday morning, the entire show will be up on all the popular podcasting channels, or you can go to the platform for this channel, mybradio.com, mybradio.com. And in the coming weeks, this will be up on YouTube. On YouTube, we're at 710 WOR Mind Your Business. And when you subscribe and you turn on notifications, you're automatically notified when the episodes go live. And you know what? Leave a comment or two. We want to hear from you. That's how we continue to produce incredible shows. Well, Reuven, let's talk about wines itself, right? There's so many different types, and then there's sweet, and then there's dry, and there's semi. Let's talk about the experience of people that enjoy wine and the range that is out there for people to enjoy.
Well, people euphemistically consider wine to be traditional wine and wine for the Seder, for Kiddush, as being sweet wine. Actually, I don't think there's a lot of truth to that. I've spoken to people that came from Europe before the war, and the wine they had was not sweet. It was a drier wine. Mm. I suspect that when people came to the United States, the only grapes they could find in the Italian market were Concord grapes, and they used that. Mm. Well, Concord grapes are table grapes, and you have to keep on adding sugar until it's palatable. And I think that might have been what happened, why people have Concord grape. If you fast forward up until, let's say, the mid-60s, that's pretty much all there was. In fact, when I was a kid, I went to the Seder, and probably you did too, and you had Concord or Malaga or Cream Red, if you were lucky, or maybe Natural Sweet. And you basically had a stomachache by the end of the Seder. When I got married, my father-in-law sold wine. And, of course, I was learning Yeshiva then, so I knew nothing about wine. But I used grape juice for the Seder because I could not stomach this wine. Somebody told me, actually one of my brother-in-laws told me, that it's much better to use wine than grape juice in order to do the mitzvah correctly. And so I decided to start drinking wine. What I discovered wasn't that I didn't like wine. I just can't drink bad wine. And Concord is not a wine, really. It's really grape juice that has sugar added to it, and it's fermented, so it has a lot of alcohol in it. And it's not really what I would consider wine that you should be drinking. However, people like it. That's fine. Let them drink it. They're selling a lot of Manischewitz and a lot of Ketam Concord. There's nothing wrong with that. But there's so many other options available. I mean, you can get probably over 1,200 or 1,300 different kinds of brands and wines that are available. Countless Cabernets, almost as many Merlots, bunch of Pinot Noirs, a bunch of Malbecs. There's no real reason why anybody has to settle for a wine that they can barely stomach. Hmm. So you end up with a wine that could be a blend or dough blend or a different kind of blend. All these wines can be fit to the way you like things, the way your taste is, and to what you're eating.
Now, Reuven, in doing the research for the show, and of course we have the honor at Bottom Line Marketing Group to be working together with OnlineKosherWine.com, there was something that stood out to me and others on the team, Michal, that really resonated, and that someone on your team, either yourself or someone on your team, try every single bottle before it's sold in order to ensure. And you discussed this in the first segment about being super focused on the customer experience and making sure that you really deliver. Now, you know, I could hear if let's say there's some bottles, especially expensive bottles, someone's not just going to open it and you just, you know, it has a good reputation, you'll sell it. But no, you or someone on your team will try it in order to make sure that it's really delicious, it's really fantastic, before it's sold to the consumer. What a lesson in customer service. Perhaps you could take it from there.
Well, that's true. I can't try nearly all the wines because there are so many of them, but we have a group of people and we know how each other's palates are like and what we prefer as a taste profile, how we look at things. And it's not just every new wine, it's also new vintages. For example, you have Castel 2016, which was considered one of the 100 best wines, I think, in the world by the Wall Street Journal, and I think they put it out 2018. That's incredible. But you try a 2017 or 18, it's not exactly the same. When you're spending $60 or $70 or $80 or maybe $90 for a bottle of wine, you want to make sure that the wine tastes and you're getting what you expect. So yeah, we try pretty much every wine that comes in. If somebody asks me, did I try the difference between, let's say, one vintage of a lower end wine and another vintage? No, because when you come to lower end wines, when you come to wines that are, let's say, $15, maybe $20 a bottle, those wines, the winemaker styles the wine so it's consistent.
Right.
I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. If you take Manischewitz Concord and you take a bottle from 1990 and take another bottle from 2020, they should taste identical. Their labs are that good. Well, there's no reason for me to try a Manischewitz. I know what it tastes like. That's the same idea here.
Right. Now let's jump to wine pairing. This is an exciting subject, especially when it comes to Yom Tovman holidays, where people have different dishes. I mean, well, we just passed Shavuos not that long ago, pairing it for a Milcha Gesuda, for a dairy meal, as opposed to a meat meal. And the different types. I mean, there could be a meat meal with meat itself, or it could be with chicken. Perhaps you could talk about that world of wine pairing and your suggestions, please.
Of course. I get phone calls about that on a consistent basis. Somebody is making a bar mitzvah party of some sort, a chasna, and they ask me what kind of wine to get. And usually the first question I ask them is, what's your budget? Give me an idea what your budget is and what did the caterer say that you should get? How many bottles did he say you should get? Once I have that information, so I know what it's going to cost the customer, then I can zero in on the kind of wine. Generally speaking, if somebody tells me they're having a menu that's, let's say, Italian in style, I'm going to steer them towards an Italian wine because usually the wines come from a specific region, usually match best with the foods from that region. Spanish wines or Spanish foods, French wines, French foods, and so on. There's no real big secret to it. It's just common sense. But a lot of people don't know what the wines taste like. So they call me up and they say to me, listen, I'm having, let's say, Chilean sea bass, and it's being made naturally. What should I use? Well, generally speaking, I would tell them, you know what? I would probably take a Sauvignon Blanc. Or maybe I would even take a white Bordeaux. But I don't know if I would take a Chardonnay, and I certainly wouldn't take a Cabernet. Not for that, because the tastes don't really meld well together. But if somebody says to me I'm having a steak, and the steak is going to be made naturally without any kind of spicing, then I'd say, oh yeah, definitely take a Cabernet, a robust Cabernet, maybe from California, or even from Israel, depending on the brands of Cabernet. Some Cabernets are not quite as robust. And then they would be able to pair it that way. But so much of it depends on what their taste is like. If they tell me, I want you to pair this, one of the first questions, besides asking them what's your budget, tell me what you don't like. That way I know I don't send you to something that you're not going to like. If you tell me I can't stand Malbec, so obviously I'm not going to send you to Malbec. But on the other hand, they don't usually know. So then I tell them, this is the classic kind of taste. And then after I'm all finished with that, I tell them, listen, the next morning, nobody from that chasna, I can't say nobody, but maybe one person will remember what they drank. Don't sweat it. It's not that important. Mainly you should buy something you like, because you're going to be stuck with wine afterwards.
Such, I love your advice. It's so down to earth, common sense, and yet it's great advice. Even pairing the wine to the foods of a specific country. I could see some people saying, oh, be creative. If you're going to have some type of, if you're having a dish from Italy, make sure to pair it with a wine from who knows where, you know, from France. Be creative. So, you know, wait a second. Okay, it's good to be creative, but let's also apply some good old-fashioned common sense.
That's like wearing orange and blue together.
Wait, we don't want to offend some Met fans out there, though. I know you're Philly countries.
Orange and blue striped tie or something like that, you know, or yellow polka dots or something that clashes.
Here's an interesting question. What determines the price of a bottle, right? There's such a range you have in the low ends and the $10 to $15. And I don't even know what's the highest label that you carry, the highest price label you carry.
Okay. Those are two different questions, actually, believe it or not. And the first part of the question is, what determines the price of a wine? Primarily, they cannot sell it for less than what it costs them plus their margin. So it has to be at least that amount. That's every business. That's a common denominator across everything. If you're not going to make money and you're not going to be able to manage, you're not going to do it. It's not going to work. That being said, the primary factor that determines the price of a wine is, what's the market going to bear? Yehi Herzog once told me, and he was 100% right, he said, if you give a coupon or you give off for a wine and your sales are not going to go up, you've wasted your money. He's right. It's true. There are people in different companies, let's say like Saks Fifth Avenue or these kinds of companies, they have people that are hired to determine what the price point is. If you have it too high, there's resistance in the market, people won't buy it. If it's too low, you're not making enough money. That's really what it is. What are people willing to spend for it? And then it's sort of like deciding, how much can a bridge hold? Well, you keep on driving heavier trucks over it until the bridge collapses. And then you know, the bridge only holds this amount. Well, it's the same thing with selling wine. You keep on raising the price and you hope that it's not going to make a difference in sales. You factor in what you think your growth should be. And after all that, if you see there's resistance, you know you've gone too high and you either have to stop or do some other kind of spiel that's going to gin up sales again.
And as far as the range of labels that you carry?
Okay, so the low-end wines, let's forget about Concord and that genre of wines, but low-end wines could be anywhere from $6 or $7 a bottle, which is not a lot, and some of them are pretty good, actually. You can go up to at least $350 a bottle, minimum, more than that, really. There's a wine called Chateau Pantécanet, which is like as rare as hen's teeth. You can't get it. Nobody has it. That wine was $300 a bottle and more. People see, you know what? Nobody has it. I'll raise the price. Why not? We don't do that, but a lot of people do it, and I understand what their logic is.
We're speaking with Reuven Ribiat, president of OnlineKosherWine.com. OnlineKosherWine.com. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
To be successful, you need to understand what you do best and do more of it.
One of the gifts I believe that we have as entrepreneurs is to be blue sky visionaries, come up with amazing ideas, yet you're only as good as your execution. I've always had coaches my entire life. Once I got into business, coaching for me was a natural must-have. What I found in the past was most coaching programs were more focused around me earning a certain amount of income or taking a certain amount of time off versus me building a business that has value far beyond me. As soon as I engaged the Covenant Group, I could distinctly see that difference.
Working with the Covenant Group, I've gotten away from being controlling about so many of the facets of our business. It has given the people that are in my organization freedom to be creative, freedom to actually develop better ways to do things. I need a coach to help evaluate those things I'm blind to. If you have a blind spot, you don't see it. Without the coach, the process in and of itself is powerful. But the coach makes it work for a guy like me, and I think, frankly, for most people.
One of the greatest benefits of working with the Covenant Group is helping to identify what is it I do best.
My name is Keith Deming.
I'm Norm Traynor.
And we educate and coach entrepreneurs
to build a high-performance business.
Learn more by visiting www.covenantgroup.com.
Finally, a payroll service that does things your way. At Brands Paycheck, you're not a number, you're a partner. Brands Paycheck's personalized payroll solutions ensure that your business receives your financial information the way you want it. From complete payroll services and time tracking to benefits administration and HR solutions, Brands Paycheck helps streamline your business's payroll process and maximize productivity. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation. Brands Paycheck services a wide range of industries nationwide, including hospitality, transportation, B2B, B2C, nonprofit, finance, retail, healthcare, real estate, and more. Learn why companies nationwide rely on Brands Paycheck. Call 888-757-3020. That's 888-757-3020 to schedule a free consultation today or visit online at BrandsPaycheck.com. That's BrandsPaycheck.com.
We're all in a rush these days. We're running to meetings to finish a project. When do we have time to educate ourselves? Enter Business Class, the free daily 60-second video clip featuring advice from C-level executives and business giants such as Beth Comstock, Jeffrey Hazlett, Joe Hart, Shep Hyken, and many more. Follow us on Instagram at Business Class Clips. That's at Business Class Clips on Instagram. Or sign up for our WhatsApp daily broadcast by texting SIGN UP to 718-594-6519 on WhatsApp. Get ready to get ahead.
And we're back. Mind your business with Yitzhak Saftas right here on 710 WOR and the iHeartRadio Network. My guest is Ruben Ribiet, president of OnlineKosherWine.com. And he's sharing a lot of great information. By the way, Ruben, I'm not asking you to share any trade secrets, but you've been sharing a lot, so we appreciate that. And this is what keeps our ratings up, so thank you. This is going to definitely be a ratings grabber, you know, this show. Maybe we'll even climb into one or two in the top 10 in New York AM radio, according to Nielsen.
That would be wonderful.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Okay. Getting back to our conversation about the industry, and this is an interesting question, and I hope I'm not putting you on the spot. Have you seen any major shifts, any changes in the industry over the last 10, 20 years in the wine industry?
Yes, an unbelievable shift. First of all, it's interesting that there are two different dynamics that are happening, actually three. The first dynamic is the fact that for some reason, kosher has become extremely hot in the general market. I don't know if people are aware of this, but in the last 10, 15 years, there have been years, consistent years for a number of them, where the growth in kosher product, every kosher product, has been double digit. People believe, and it's true, kosher is better. Kosher is higher quality. They're more careful. They're more meticulous. People are willing to spend the money for it. And as a result of that, that's why the numbers show it. The second thing is that, believe it or not, the Balchuva movement has had tremendous impact on the wine industry. So many people that were once not from and are Chozer B'tshuva, remember the wines that they have. I get phone calls all the time from people. Well, when I wasn't from, I drank this wine. Is there anything like that available? And usually I'd have to tell them no, but now there are so many wines that used to not be available to the Bali Tshuva movement or the Chozer B'tshuva movement that are now available. And because of that, it's driven the brands itself, the kind of the categories themselves higher, because it's not just the people that are Chozer B'Tshuva that are interested, we're getting orders from people in Monroe, people in Williamsburg, people in Crown Heights. These are people that are Hasidim, Samar Hasidim, Stolen Hasidim, Munkach, who knows where they're coming from. All these people are much more interested in higher end kosher wine. I can't begin to tell you the amount of wine that some people buy because they just like wine and it doesn't make any difference. So you have wine stores in Williamsburg and in Muncie. They're selling wines that are $150, $200 and at no problem at all, people are buying them. And they're not being bought by people that are learning in BMG or the Mir. They're actually being bought by regular people who are interested in wine. That's a huge change in the industry. The highest growth in percentage has been in the better categories of wine. In fact, some of these categories have been passed by. It used to be $25 was considered a premium wine, not anymore. $30 is the minimum premium wine, probably closer to $35. Anything a $40, $45 wine is considered like lower end premium. But you start getting into mid premium, like in the $75 bottle range, and higher end premium, let's say $120, and then obviously the real expensive stuff is a category of its own.
Now, Ruvain, this next question will be obvious to the wine connoisseurs out there, but perhaps you could address, are there differences between wines in different parts of the world, from France, from Italy, from Eretz Yisrael?
Not only are there differences between these areas, but there are even differences between, let's say, one chateau and another chateau, even the same chateau in France. Sometimes you'll have a vineyard that's grown on the south side of a mountain as opposed to the north side of the mountain. The vineyards, the grapes will be totally different from one to the other. The style will be different. When you're talking about a different area of the world, for example, let's say Israel as opposed to France, then the differences are even more distinct. However, I should tell you this, that when Israel fought in the 1967 war, they took over the Golan Heights, there was a commission made up by the Israelis to go to Washington State to see about growing apples in the Golan. And they went to Washington State, and the guy from Washington State, this is the story, I'm not sure it's true, I think it is. He said, you know, you can grow apples here, but this is great land for wine. It's perfect. So you've got a microcosm of what could be considered an area in Bordeaux or in Burgundy, as opposed to in Israel, of what they look like. So you've got wines that are growing there, Yatir and Castile. These wines come from this kind of area, not specifically Golan and other parts of Israel also. And as a result of that, the wines can be styled in a way that can almost imitate French wines. However, there's always a difference. You can always tell if you're drinking a lot of Burgundy, you can tell the difference between a wine that's Israeli, that is, let's say, Burgundy, a Pinot Noir type of wine.
Ruvain, what advice would you recommend to someone who's new to wine, someone who's now open to the idea of opening themselves up to that world, the taste palate? They aren't familiar with wine at all. What's your advice for them?
Well, go to a good wine store and somebody who knows at least some of the product they have. And the first question you should ask, listen, I only drink traditional type of wine, whatever it happens to be. I really would like to start getting into wines that were drier. But I'm afraid that if I take a wine that's super dry, I won't like it. My kids won't like it. My wife won't like it. And that'll be the end of it. Can you give me something that'll sort of be a good segue between sweet and dry? He should be able to tell you that. And it doesn't have to be a semi-sweet. It can be a dry wine. There are a number of dry wines out there that don't taste dry, but are actually dry wines and don't have that cloying sweetness at the end. You say, I don't know, I this tastes like spiked Coca-Cola or something.
We're speaking with Ruvain Ribiat, president of OnlineKosherWine.com. We're going to take a short commercial break. Stay tuned.
If you're installing hardwood or SPC or WPC vinyl flooring, do it with the highest quality products. PC Hardwood Floors, the hardwood flooring leader, has been supplying flooring professionals with the highest quality flooring materials for over 40 years. The knowledgeable team at PC Hardwood Floors will ensure that your materials will arrive at your job site by our own fleet trucks, hassle-free. With 7 locations in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, and next-day delivery, PC Hardwood Floors is the tri-state area's preferred full-service hardwood flooring distributor. Call 866-369-3232 to find out how PC Hardwood Floors can help you find the right hardwood products and finishing supplies for all your flooring projects. For a free consultation, call 866-369-3232. That's 866-369-3232. Or visit us at pchardwoodfloors.com. That's pchardwoodfloors.com.
We're all in a rush these days. We're running to meetings to finish a project. When do we have time to educate ourselves? Enter Business Class, the free daily 60-second video clip featuring advice from C-level executives and business giants such as Beth Comstock, Jeffrey Hazlett, Joe Hart, Shep Hyken, and many more. Follow us on Instagram at Business Class Clips. That's at Business Class Clips on Instagram. Or sign up for our WhatsApp daily broadcast by texting SIGNUP to 718-594-6519 on WhatsApp. Get ready to get ahead.
Well, that's it for today. Tomorrow's guest, Eli Manning.
My schedule's been packed lately.
Eli, don't forget, business call in 20 minutes.
Just never ends.
Oh, and we've got that production meeting.
So I do my business banking on my time, online with Investors Bank.
Investors Bank makes it easy to manage your accounts anytime with the flexibility of online and mobile banking.
Finally, I'm calling a timeout. Well, maybe not.
Visit investorsbank.com or stop by a branch. Member FDIC. Investors Bank is a division of Citizens Bank N.A.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Zaflis right here on 710 WOR and the iHeartRadio Network. In case you tuned in late, no worries. By Tuesday morning, the entire show will be up on all the popular podcasting channels. Hello to all those tuning in on Spotify. And our platform, which hosts all past shows, is mybradio.com, mybradio.com. My guest is none other than Reuven Ribiat, president of OnlineKosherWine.com, OnlineKosherWine.com. Reuven, in this last segment, we still have quite a few questions. And again, thank you for making yourself available for tonight's show. Can you tell us about wine libraries?
Well, wine library is, wine library is really a euphemism for an area where the wine that's being stored there is not being shown or sold. There's a couple of reasons why you might want to do that. The first reason is because the wine that you have there, you've taken a position on, you've bought more product than you might reasonably expect to sell within a year. But you want to keep the wine because you're not sure the wine is ready to be sold. It may be a little bit too early. The vintage might be need some time to age, and wine does age in a bottle. So you really want to do that. You want to get off on its best foot forward. The end of all wine is really vinegar, and you want to make sure you hit that point where it's the best. And giving it to somebody, you say, look, you hold it for a year or two or 3 years, that's when it's going to peak. That's one reason why. The second reason is because you don't have a lot of it. And you have a responsibility to customers who use you all the time. If you have a customer that's consistently using you and he expects you to have the product that he might want, so you want to make sure, you want to be proactive and put this product away to make sure that your customer has what it is they're needing. They're expecting you to do it. They're depending on you. You have to do that. And the third reason why you might want to do that, and we actually don't do this, is people do that because they want to be able to wait till the wine goes up in value. We don't do that. We will sell a wine if the market price for a wine is $75, that's what we're going to sell it for. However, if we've only got 3 cases of it and we know it's in high demand, we're not going to sell it to somebody who we don't know or we think that just want to put it in their, let's say, their china cabinet to show everybody they've got that. I would sooner sell it to somebody, even if they're not a regular customer, that's going to enjoy it and drink it. But that's really the reason why you have a wine library. It's like any other library, except it's not open to everybody.
Now, Reuven, an interesting question, perhaps a delicate question, and that is, especially as the president of OnlineKosherWine.com, can you explain what are damaged label bottles?
Okay, that's very simple. Every once in a while, the truck goes somewhere, and they make a sudden stop or a turn, and a case falls over, and a bottle cracks. When that happens, almost all the labels in that case get stained. Well, most people don't want to buy a bottle of wine for the same price as a clean label as they would for a damaged label. Why should they? I'll take the better label instead. The wine doesn't really taste any different. It's exactly the same. We have a lot of different wines that have been damaged, have damaged labels for one reason or another. In most cases, the wine labels got stained, or some cases they got torn. If the case was open and the bottles were rolling around the truck, so all the labels are all scratched up. The wine itself is fine. The guarantee that we have for wine is absolutely the same, whether it's damaged label or non-damaged label. We stand behind everything. And we have no incentive to sell somebody a bottle of wine that's no good, because then we end up having to send it to them and we pay for the shipping going back and forth. We don't want to do that. So we stand behind every bottle of wine. We make sure that before it goes out, to the best of our ability, that the wine is good.
So it sounds like it's actually a great benefit to anyone out there that realizes that, hey, the wine in the bottle is exactly the same. They're just getting a discount because the label, which they're going to drink that bottle. It's not like a book that's damaged and that will stay that way. Once they drink the bottle's gone.
Yeah, it really doesn't make sense unless you need it for a presentation. There's no real reason why you should have to worry about that. You can save anywhere from 10 to 25, even 50% off the, actually more than 20, about 20 to 50% off the suggested retail price of a wine.
Now, Reuven, OnlineKosherWine.com is known for exceptional customer service, and we discussed this in earlier parts of tonight's show. Perhaps you could still talk about how critical that is for an overall business strategy of any company of any type.
Okay, the fact is that most people don't realize it, but almost any business you're in, you're really not selling product, you're really selling service. That's the way we look at it. All the wines that we have, you can get someplace else, every one of them. The difference between us and everybody else is service. We cross all our T's, dot all our I's as much as humanly possible. To us, the customer is why we're in business. We're only in business because of you. And as far as we're concerned, nothing else is important. We're not interested in kowtowing to some kind of idea or a different company or anything like that. All we care about is what is going to make the customer happy. And we'll bend over backwards for customer. We'll do things that other companies wouldn't consider doing because we feel that the customer might be right.
Now, Reuven, we discussed this earlier in the show. You transitioned a successful brick and mortar business to a completely online business. Perhaps you could share what is one strategy that comes to mind that you could recommend to the audience when a company transitions from brick and mortar to online?
Well, being online, from bricks and mortar to being online, bricks and mortar, you have the advantage of being able to have a personal relationship with customers. However, when you're talking to one customer and four other customers in the store, you can't have that relationship with the other four customers. Can only have it with the one you're talking to. Online business is not like that. Even though it's true, you can't talk to them all at the same time, but the ability to communicate with them either by email or other ways you can call them is still there. And that's something that's so important, to be able to have the customer feel that they have somebody to talk to. You don't end up calling somebody, let's say General Motors, where you go through about 10 people and hopefully you'll get to the right person. It's not like that at all with us. Once you get on the line with us, once you get an email, we answer with a timely fashion and let you know what our answer is. We try to help you as much as possible. That is a huge advantage in online business. When you're talking about a bricks and mortar, you don't have that ability to have that kind of relationship with as many people as you have with online business. Just the idea of knowing that customers are what your purpose is. You're there for them. You're there to provide them with a service. Once you understand that, the transition becomes, it's not easy, but it's much more understandable.
Now, Ruvain, just an interesting question. Perhaps, how often do new labels come out? Is there any type of strategy behind new products and labels as they enter the market?
Yeah, it's an interesting question that has really a lot of background to it, because the impetus behind having new labels is what grapes are available. And obviously that depends on what kind of weather you had and the area of the country that's coming, or the area of the world these grapes are coming from. So would you have, let's say there's a tremendous amount of Sauvignon Blanc grapes available. So somebody who has all these grapes is going to think to himself, well, there's a glut of Sauvignon Blanc on the market. Let's try to make a wine that has Sauvignon Blanc, mostly Sauvignon Blanc, call it something else. That would be the purpose of them having a new label. That's a strategy from the producer's viewpoint. From the retailer's, well, from the importer's viewpoint, he's almost stuck because he agreed with this producer to take this product in. So, of course, he's going to have some resistance. You know, we have so many Sauvignon Blancs around. What are we going to do with another one? When the guy says, listen, you're an importer, you have to do it. Then you come to the retailer. So the retailer, what's the retailer's advantage? Well, anything new has an advantage to it. Somebody comes in, I tried all these whites. What do you suggest? Well, try this. This is new. Hopefully you've tried it and you like it and you can describe it. If you haven't, then shame on you. You should have done it. But in the meantime, this is what is the primary issue as far as new wines are concerned. The strategy is simple. You know, make sure you know what your product is. Make sure you understand the product. And make sure you have people that you know that are going to like this product. If you don't have the clientele for it, it doesn't matter. It makes no difference. You don't buy it then, because there's no point in keeping it. But the new products constantly coming out. There's all kinds of new wines every year. Probably between 150 to 200 different wines come out every year, maybe more. Hmm.
Ruvain, we have approximately 2 minutes left to the show, and this is an important question that I'm asking you in particular as the president of OnlineKosherWine.com, and that is, wine is usually sold in person. What's your strategy for keeping your clients buying online instead of in person?
Well, first let's talk about what the advantage of buying online altogether is. A person who's buying online can decide they can't sleep that night, gets up 2 o'clock in the morning and sits in his pajamas and starts surfing the internet to find different things that he wants. If he likes wine, he starts going to wine websites. Well, what's going to keep him on my wine website as opposed to going to a bricks and mortar? Well, worst thing is it's 2 o'clock in the morning. No bricks or mortar are open then. And secondly, he doesn't want to get out and get into his car. Maybe it's cold, maybe it's hot, maybe there's no parking. And even if he has parking, he has to schlep it in and out of the store, into the trunk, and then break it from his trunk into the house. It's a pain in the neck. He doesn't want to do all that. So it's easier to just look online. What keeps a person online is making sure that they don't have to click too often. What I mean by that is, you go look for a wine. Let's say you want to see all the Cabernets. What you should be able to do is type in Cabernet in the search button, and all the Cabernets should come up, 200 Cabernets. You should be able to scroll through all those Cabernets easily and just look at them, and there should be a little bit of a blurb about each one. But even if there isn't, clicking on it and having 3 or 4 sentences about this wine is hugely important. Many wine companies, many of the online wine companies make the mistake of just copying what's on the back of the bottle. Mm. If you haven't tried the wine or you don't have an opinion about it, okay, you have no choice. But if you have an opinion, put it down. I tried this one. I thought it was great. And this is why. That's hugely important, because now we're not talking about somebody from, let's say, Barkan, who has described their wine. And by the way, some of the wine companies, I'm amazed that they do this, they'll just put down on the back, well, this comes from a wonderful area and the wine's delicious and all that. And all the labels have exactly the same description. That's a big mistake. Spend some time, write about the wine, because if you don't write about it, nobody's going to want to try it. If it's fine at $6, $7 a bottle, okay, fine. But if you're talking about a wine that's $50 or $60 a bottle, you better make sure that you have some kind of opinion on back there. And if you have somebody who has actually tried it, Anthony Dias Blue, or let's say any of the other wine rating sites, put it down there. For heaven's sakes, if you have Wine Spectator gave it a 90, put down Wine Spectator gave it a 90, or Decanter gave it a 92, or James Suckling. Those are hugely important. That tells people that it's not just the company that's making the wine that thinks it's good. There are independent people that like it also. And these people are not Jewish. They don't know anything about Judaism. They could care less. They just care about wine.
What an incredible show. Reuven Ribiat, president of OnlineKosherWine.com. And yes, as you're listening to the show, as it's wrapping up on a Sunday night, they're open, so you can go there now and make your purchase, OnlineKosherWine.com. This wraps up an incredible show. Tune in again next Sunday night for another great edition of Mind Your Business right here on 710 WOR. Have a successful week.
710 WOR and the iHeartRadio Network present Mind Your Business, hosted by the president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis. Founded in 1992, Bottom Line Marketing Group is a strategic, creative, and execution-driven marketing agency, helping businesses by clarifying and promoting their vision, mission, and purpose to support its lead generation and customer retention initiatives to gain market share in their industry. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. for this intriguing radio show as Yitzhak interviews Fortune 500 executives, business leaders, and marketing gurus from a wide variety of business industries. Now, Yitzhak and his guests offer their knowledge and expertise to help you be successful every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.